What's going on, everybody? It's your boy DJ Anonymous with Sports Biz Music, the podcast, episode 60. And I got a special guest on the show today. I got Benjamin Lester. How you doing, man?
What's up, DJ? Thanks for having me, my brother. Appreciate that.
No problem, man. For the people that don't really know of you yet, especially down south, tell them about what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. DJ, thank you for the intro. I'm actually a very young real estate entrepreneur. I'm a 21-year-old, pretty successful real estate agent in the west side of Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. So I cover mostly single-family residences all around, like, Beverly Hills, Bel Air, Malibu, Santa Monica, really the high-end luxury sector of LA. And I do a couple different things. The bread and butter of my business is I represent investors, and I find them, houses to flip, to develop, really on the investment side, and helping them earn a good investment on basically on their return. So I find them flips, and we resell them, and it's a very beautiful, profitable business. So if anyone out there is looking to get into real estate, anybody can reach out to me directly, and I would love to have a conversation with everyone.
Well, we're going to talk about that in just a little bit, to get them more into detail, because, me myself, before we started recording, like I said, I wanted to learn too as well. But tell me and the listeners, like, what was the beginnings, like, what made you want to get into, like, real estate?
Yeah, DJ, that's a great question. So I actually went to Beverly Hills High School a few years ago, and I come from a middle-class family. My family didn't have too much money. I didn't know really anything about real estate or anything about building wealth in general, to be quite honest. And what happened was a lot of the kids, a lot of my classmates and associates in school, they were brought up by very wealthy families. And what I realized was the common denominator in all these families with, 15, 16, 17-year-old kids driving, $100,000, $200,000 cars, right, is their family is all in real estate. So whether some of their parents are successful real estate agents, successful developers, investors, whatever the sector in real estate may be, the common denominator was real estate. So I knew back in high school, hey, listen, I need to get myself involved in real estate now. So what happened was I come from, a very big basketball background. So, in high school, I wanted to have a future in basketball, but I realized, I don't think I do have a future. So I wanted to start early with real estate. So what happened was actually when I was a senior in high school back in 2015 now, I believe, I quit basketball and I decided to get my first job. So I got my first job at a cafe. I was 18, I believe, at the time. So I got a job and, I started to learn some finances. I ended up saving enough money to lease my own car. And then from there, I just gradually, got my foot in the door in real estate. So, I was reaching out to basically every broker I could find. And, I offered to work for them for free. I ended up getting some good internships. And, one opportunity led to another. And now I'm here working for myself. And, I run a pretty successful team.
That's what's up. So, explain to the people, the challenges of, being a realtor.
Yeah. So the biggest challenge of being a realtor is that there's a lot of competition. So, especially in LA, you're in the number one or number two biggest and most competitive market on the planet, arguably next to New York. So, I would say LA, well, maybe the Manhattan market. I would say, LA is number one or number two. So, the biggest thing, the biggest challenge, for getting started is, getting your first listing, really overcoming the no's, right? So you're going to get a lot of no's, just like in any sales job. You're going to get a lot of no's. You need to have the mental strength to overcome that. See, for me, I knew, I was starting out really young. I knew a lot of people wouldn't take me very seriously. I knew I had a big disadvantage because of my youth. But I knew, I'm in this for the long haul. All I needed was one person to believe in me. and one person to give me a listing to let me sell their house. And, you know, when I got over that, you know, I still have challenges. Everyone has challenges. But the biggest thing is, like, really, you know, getting over them and knowing, like, hey, if I put my mind to this and if I, you know, really focus on this, then eventually it will work out.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of people got to realize that, you know, any career, like you said before, like, you had a great point. Any industry, like, it's going to be very hard at first, but then, like, it's going to get, you know, easier and easier and easier, even though it going to be, like, I remember I spoke to someone, because I know a lot of relatives, especially from high school, and I asked them, I was like, you know, like, is it really that hard? And they was like, yeah, but once you start, you know, finding that one person, and that person, you know, start doing word of mouth, because, you know, even though we live in the social media era, it's still word of mouth, it still exists, you know. It don't matter if you could be, like, the well-known realtor off of social media, off the internet, people still have to, like, get that confirmation from, you know, word of mouth, like, in person, you know, so...
Exactly. Another big thing, another very hard challenge, you know, when you first get started is, you know, it's probably going to take you your first 1 or 2 years in the business to make money, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, the hardest thing is kind of, you know, supporting yourself in the meantime before you make your own sale. So some people, that's easy. I was actually working at a hotel, the SLS Hotel. I know they have it in Miami, but, you know, I was working at the one in L.A., and I was working there for a little under a year or so before I really got started in real estate. So, like, you know, a big challenge is making ends meet before, you know, you start producing yourself.
Yeah, because, like, you know, relatives pretty much, they are aging. Like, you know, I'm pretty sure, like, in your career, you have to, like, build relationships too. That's right, right?
Exactly. It's a lot of relationship building. You know, you see, for example, for me, I'll call someone or I'll meet someone, and then it might be, like, you know, 5 or 6 or 1 year later until I actually start selling their house. You know what I mean? So real estate is all about relationship building, connections, and, you know, that's pretty much the gist of the business. So whoever, you know, is the best people, whoever's very persistent with people, you know, ends up winning. For example, like, you know, if I were to sell your house and I really want to sell your house, let's say I call you or, like, I knock on your door or something, you know, I'm going to keep calling you until you answer. So, you know, it's all about being persistent and, you know, really never giving up on what you have your eyes on.
So what was, like, your first, like, I guess your first client? Like, how was that feeling? Yeah.
So, my first client, well, my first listing, I would say.
Yeah.
I got really lucky, actually. You know, you get lucky a lot in the business. What happened was I had my eyes on this house in particular in the Beverly Hills area, and I wasn't able to reach the seller right away. It took a long time to reach. And what happened was, you know, every day for like 2 or 3 months, I would knock on his door, I would call him. You know, the client lives overseas in China, so it's very hard to get a hold of him. You know, he has another house out here that I was working on. And then one day what happened was I met his landscaper outside, and he gave me his direct line. And then, you know, we ended up talking for like a couple weeks, and then he finally, you know, after a lot of basically, you know, pushing him and a lot of, you know, a lot of persistence, he ended up, you know, letting me list his house. And that was a great feeling because, you know, it's tough getting listings in like that very prestigious part of LA. So for me, it was like, okay, if a young guy could get a listing in this area, then, you know, nothing is stopping me. I could get listings anywhere. So for me to have, you know, that one client, my first client, really believe in me, that was a very big milestone for me, because it showed me, you know, the hard work and persistence really pays off in the end. So that was a very big realization for me too. And at the time, you know, I went a few months without any results, and, you know, no sales, no clients or anything. So to see it all, you know, work out in the end was very promising, and you know, really helps a lot of people.
As a realtor, because I always want to ask a realtor this, like, How you know, what do y'all do during like the slow seasons? Like, do y'all still like try to, you know, find clients, or do y'all rather just find like different listings? Like, how does it work during the slow seasons?
Great question, DJ. Normally, you know, the slower parts of the year is kind of towards the end of the year, like December, like, you know, end of December, early December area, and like the holidays, like Hanukkah and Christmas, you know, in the mid to early December area.
Right.
Those are definitely the slowest parts because people are moving, they're on vacation. You know, people don't want to work, their kids are home, for example, for winter break. So during those slow seasons, those slow times, to be quite honest with you, like, that's the time to take a vacation in real estate, right? So, like, you want to go the whole year working, and then towards the end of the year, you want a vacation. But, you know, it doesn't stop, though. You know, you want to do your best and try to reach out to as many people as you can. You want to still get all of your phone calls in, all of, like, your door knocking in, all of your prospecting in. And again, you know, real estate is a numbers game. So all it takes is one person to say yes. So for me, it's like, you know, a lot of people are staying home during those slow seasons. A lot of people are home with their family, maybe on vacation. Like, you know, that still doesn't stop me. I'm still calling. So for me, even though I know it's slow, there are still a lot of people who may take you on. So it's just all about finding the right, you know, client and the right person. So, you know, the gist of it is, like, you know what, it doesn't change. You got to keep working.
Yeah, because I always felt like, you know, around December, because someone told me this before, even like with apartments, I rent on apartments, they always say the slowest season is like, you know, just the holidays pretty much because of, you know, like you said, a lot of people go out of town, you know, people saving up, people spending money on gifts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I always look at, like, you know, between like the March and April, like the spring to the summers, is like more of the fast pace. So to get into that, like, how it is when it's fast paced, like, I know the phone be blowing up around them times.
Yeah, the phones are blowing up. It's good, especially like when you have your own listing. Then yeah, you definitely have a lot of buyers calling you, which is very exciting. So, you know, you want to do your best to sell the houses that you currently have, and then get more listings too. Because during the hot times, like, it's really hot. People are going to put offers on your home. People are trying to see. You know, you're going to have showings, you know, a few times a day. So it's all about preparing and making sure you're well prepared for the fast times. But you know, it's the most exciting time, honestly. You know, a lot of people right now, it's a hot market. You know, a lot of people right now are trying to sell, get the top dollar for their house. A lot of people are also trying to buy too, because, you know, even though it's hot, a lot of people are still willing to sell. So people can get houses maybe like a little bit below market value. So it's, all in all, it's a very exciting time for buyers and sellers.
Yeah, that's what's up. So let me, because I know a lot of people want to know this, you know, especially myself, is that, like, you know, the most popular thing right now in real estate is buying and flipping homes and stuff like that. And I listen to so many people, but I never really got like a direct answer, because I think that's why it's so hard for me to even start. You know, it's some people that say that, you know, they got that middleman, you know, strategy where you get the contract and then you go to your realtor, then yada, yada, yada. You get the, I guess he buy that contract and you get like a percentage and stuff like that. You familiar with that, right?
Exactly.
How does that really work?
So, it's a very common business. In fact, you know, I'm not going to lie, I do it sometimes if the deal is right. What happens is that process is called wholesaling flipping, right?
Yes.
So the real term for that, the real estate term, is actually called assigning. Okay? Now, what assigning is basically, let's say your house, DJ, is worth like $2 million, right?
Yeah.
And let's say I were to come to you and say, hey, I want to put an offer on your house for like 1.5 or like 1.6, for example. And let's say the seller says yes. So now you are in a contract for a property that's far below market value. And now it's your job to sell that contract to another buyer for market value. And that's where the flip comes in. So now let's say the property is worth $2 million, and you're in it for 1.6, mm-hmm. now you actually made $400,000 on the sale because you bought it a little bit, you know, a lot below market value. So it's a very common thing. It's a very old trick in the book, and used correctly, it will make you a fortune.
But how does that work for someone like, you know, like myself, where I might not have that much experience with real estate, or I may not have the money, or...
Yeah.
Like, how does that really work? Because let's say I want to do that, and I come to you. Like, how does that process work?
Yeah, great question. Mm-hmm. So you know, it actually doesn't cost that much money.
Okay.
You know, especially if you're doing, you know, far, you know, very small deals. Mm-hmm. So the only thing, if you know for sure that you want to work on this project, and if you know for sure that you have a buyer on the flip side, then the only out-of-pocket expenses will be the deposit. So normally, definitely in California, mm-hmm. and it's pretty similar throughout the whole nation, you're going to put a deposit for normally 3%, right? Mm-hmm. So let's say you're working on a very, very, very small project, right? Let's say you're working on a, for example, in LA, like a $1 million project, right? Let's say you're able to the property is worth like $1.3 million.
Yes.
And you get it under contract for $1 million, right?
Right.
And if you know absolutely for sure that you will have a buyer and you will be able to flip it, then the only thing you need to pay is the deposit for the escrow. And that's usually 3%. So, like, if you know for sure you're about to assign it and flip it, then you're looking at, like, a $30,000 deposit that you could get back. That is refundable normally if you actually get into escrow. So normally, like, the risks and the expenses are pretty minimal mm-hmm. on a wholesale flip. Because, you know, you end up putting the deposit that is refundable, and then if you end up closing the deal, then yeah, you'll make like a few $100,000, you know, and then you obviously get that the deposit money goes into the purchase price. So it's a very good, you know, it's pretty reasonable. And for example, like if you do put the deposit down, mm-hmm. then you, and then if you're not able to find a buyer, you in most cases, you will get that deposit back. So, you know, I've done a few deals where, you know, I put a deposit in, you know, one of my clients deposited in, and, you know, we weren't able to complete the deal, but he got it back. So it's like, it's a very little to no risk, but high return. So it works out for a lot of people if done right. You just need to know the market. You know what I mean? The biggest thing for you, you need to know what market you're doing it in, because you need to be familiar with, you know, price per square foot, what right. things are selling for, what the spread will be. So what area do you live in?
I stay in the Fort Lauderdale area, because I'm from Miami, I'm from Dade, but me and my wife, we live here in Broward County. You know, it's like a county up from Dade, so I stay in the Fort Lauderdale, Pima Pines area, like the suburban area.
Yeah. So what I would do, DJ, for you is, like, I would really study up on, you know, what's selling in the Fort Lauderdale area. I need to know, you know, what's selling, what isn't selling, so that mm-hmm. way, you know, I'm always successful in my flips. Does that make sense? Did I answer your question?
No, it makes sense. The only other question I have to ask, too, is also, like, you know, we have these apps, these apps, you know, they already have, like, realtors, you know, pretty much cover them. But are there any, like, other websites where you can have an actual listings where you can find, like, Like, other than Zillow and stuff, do you have, like, other websites where you could actually find, like, the homes in the area without going through, like, I guess, finding those, what I'm trying to say, because I've seen it before where some people say you don't have to go to Zillow. It's like you have to go to like a website or something like that where you find like the listings or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, right now there's a lot of websites. You know, the technology era in real estate has really boomed. Mm-hmm. So you know, pretty much every day there's like a new website or a new app. But the truth is, like, all of them are the same. So you have like the regular, like, it's called the multiple listing service. That's what it's called in California. I'm not 100% sure what it's called in Florida. But in California, it's called the multiple listing service. And through that, that's like the main website that realtors list, list their properties. But from the MLS, it actually syncs to all these third-party databases. For example, like Zillow, Redfin, Trulia, and sites like those. So basically, the way it works is once you list it on the MLS, then automatically, you know, it's public on all those other databases. So it's a great thing for realtors, because for me, you know, when I list, like, let's say a house in Beverly Hills on the MLS, think about how many people in the world are typing in homes for sale in Beverly Hills, homes for sale in Los Angeles. So now all of these people who are at home on their computer browsing listings, so they'll always see my listing or, you know, any other listing that's, you know, that's public because of all these third-party websites. So it's very positive and very helpful for agents like myself.
Oh, so you sound like, so for someone who's trying to flip a home, I can use Zillow and all that to find like a home.
You could use Zillow. The truth is, for wholesaling, you're gonna want to do mostly homes that are off the market.
Yeah,
pocket listings.
So, that's what it's called, right?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So with pocket listings, there is a website called the Pocket Listing Service. Actually, a close friend of mine runs it. You know, they have pocket listings, but like the truth is, the way you wholesale, you know, successfully is by finding those pocket listings. And you know, they're very easy to navigate. Like, for example, like, let's say you're looking on a street called Durango. Like, okay, like, for example, my street is called Durango.
Yeah.
So for me, I know what houses are on the market and what's public. So for me, you know, I will just knock on any other door that's not listed and say, like, hey, would you sell your house? And then you give them an offer, and then that's when you wholesale. That's how you're successful with it.
Okay, so now you got my answer and everybody else's answer for that, because, you know, people out here, they're very cautious and afraid. And, like, with me, it's like, I just want to, like, know as much as possible before I make that next move, because I don't want to, you know, do something and I do something wrong and then I get a backlash and stuff like that. Because I think that's what people are afraid of. They're afraid of doing something wrong rather than, you know, instead of worrying about doing something wrong, just be patient and just learn, you know, just do as much research as you can. What's your opinion on the, I guess, like, on real estate right now, like the what's the word I'm trying to say? I got a brain fart. The climate of, you know, like the homes and stuff like that, of real estate.
Yeah. To me, that's a great question. To me, I haven't really felt it too much. You know, in a market like Los Angeles, you're always going to have people coming in and buying homes and wanting to sell and relocate. So the truth is, for me, I haven't really been feeling it that hard. But, you know, homes are definitely staying on the market longer. So for me, like, when I sell a house, the house stays on the market, like, longer. It will take a little bit longer to sell, but, like, they end up selling, you know what I mean? So for me, what I've seen is home prices aren't really declining too much. They're just staying on the market a bit longer. And that's kind of like a whole nationwide thing, basically, in every state. But, you know, the market fluctuates. It's very similar to stocks, you know. So, like, 1 month, you'll have a nice, you know, nationwide month where things are selling a bit faster, and, you know, other months it'll take, you know, homes are selling at a much slower rate. So it's all about kind of just being prepared and, you know, just adjusting to the changing market.
Right, because, you know, especially with this the shutdown, well, I heard it's temporary. Everyone's back at work now, I think, for like 3 weeks now.
Yeah.
And, like, I seen,
with the snow month. It was a very slow month, for sure.
Yeah, and the country lost about $1 billion. And that's why I always ask, like, you know, like, when, especially when it comes to, like, you know, real estate, like, you know, y'all have your slow seasons, y'all have your fast-paced seasons, but when it comes to a situation like that, do the prices, like, go down? Do they go up? Do they stay?
So, exactly. Good question. Mm-hmm. Normally, prices do go down. Well, always, you know, mostly always prices do go down. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is, let's say, like, I'm trying to sell your house, right? Mm-hmm. And let's say we list your house at, like, $2 million, and it's not selling, right? Mm-hmm. There may be a lot of other competition. There may be high inventory in the area. There may be two other houses on the block that's on the market. So the reason why prices are going down is because, you know, the home needs to sell. So, for example, like, if I were to sell your house and the house is selling, the first thing I'm telling you is, yo, DJ, we need to lower the price. So, like, you know, let's say you're asking $2 million and it stops selling, then right. I would say, like, yo, DJ, we need to get more attention. I want to get more people in the door. Then that's when I say, like, hey, okay, let's drop the price to, like, 1.95 or, like, 1.9 or something, because that's how I stay competitive in the market. I want my house to sell instead of, you know, the other houses on the block. So that's basically the only reason why home sales, price-wise, decline a little bit, only to stay competitive, because, you know, when houses are on the market, then it's like, okay, damn, I need to, you know, lower my price a little bit. I need to be more competitive and be more incentivizing.
Yeah, because, like, me and my wife, we were, like, home searching, and I noticed that it's some homes that they prices went down, like, by 20,000-30,000. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
So it's, like, not just because it's the slow season, but also, you know, with everything that's going on, because I always looked at real estate as, like, stocks. You know, it could go up one day, go down one day, you know, stay steady for a couple weeks. So... That's what's up. So let's get into business. Now, before we yesterday we was texting and stuff, and you was telling me that you used to invest in startups. And my undergrad, I went to FIU, and they, one of the biggest things was they always believe in people should, you know, encourage people to do a startup, you know, get people to invest in it, and then, you know, you never know. It could be like the next Apple, the next Microsoft, the next Oracle. You know, them big, huge companies. So, what was your experience like, you know, investing in startups and things of that nature, or having a startup?
Yeah, great question. So, startups are very tricky, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The reason why startups are very tricky is because of the people that are actually, you know, running the company. And, you know, it's easy to find companies to invest in, mm-hmm. but it's hard to find, you know, it's easy to find good companies or good startups to invest in, but the thing is, it's a lot harder to find good people to invest in, right?
Right.
So, you know the saying, like, when you marry someone, you end up marrying their family.
Yes.
It's kind of similar to startups. It's like when you invest in a startup, you more so invest in the people that's running them. And, you know, anybody could get, you know, to the point of, you know, becoming a bit profitable, you know, getting to the stages that need the early seed round of funds. It's easy to get to that point, but it's just very hard to kind of, you know, to invest in the people that are going to be in it for the long haul, because you see a lot of people who are kind of half and half in the business, you know, not so invested, maybe interested in other things. And, you know, when you invest in a startup, like, you really need to make sure that it's right with the market and that there's a big need for it. So that's my advice to people who are getting into startups. Like, make sure, you know, my point is to really make sure that there's a need for it in the market, because, you know, people have all these ideas that don't really make sense, or that there's no use for them, and they end up putting, you know, like, years of their time into it, and it turns out that there's no need for it in the market. So for me, startups are very tricky, only because, you know, there's very few times where there's actually a need for it, you know, where you'll get customers, where you'll get, you know, for example, subscribers or whatever the platform is. It's hard to stay relevant, That's what I'm saying.
What was like your, what was I guess your experience like with startups in terms of like what startups that became successful?
Great question. So I've been a part of a couple of successful startups. The first startup I actually put my time into and some of my funds into was a beautiful marketing app called Spade. It's still up and running. It's still in the early stages. But this company in particular, what it does is basically like a cross-marketing company that helps advertise non-competing businesses. So for example, let's say you own a pizza shop.
Right.
What Spade does is we'll get your pizza shop advertisements in like non-competing businesses. So for example, we may partner you up with like an ice cream shop or something. Basically, you know, a similar consumer base, but a non-competing business. So for example, is we'll get your ads or your products, you know, in an advertisement way in other stores or other businesses. And then that business who is holding the advertisement gets money for every time they host or for however period it is. So it's basically just in like the small business marketing sector. So that's kind of what I'm doing a little bit right now. But as I told you before, I'm really just trying to focus as much as I can in real estate.
Yeah, that's what's up, man. I just wanted to ask you that. And one more question before we move on.
Also to add on to that is like before you start a business and before you invest in one, the biggest thing for me, TJ, is like you got to make sure that you have time for it. You know what I mean? You got to make sure like, you know, you actually have time to invest, to be a part of it, to kind of be like a venture capitalist of it. Like not only give money, but also, you know, help them grow. And that's the biggest thing. Like don't go investing in businesses to just say, hey, like I'm an investor. Like it's a lot more than that. Like you gotta put a lot of time into it. So that's the biggest thing. That's where I have to leave you with.
Nah, that's what's up, because I'm trying to soak in as much knowledge as I can, because one of the questions I was about to ask you too is that the person or the people who started in the startup, how much, what's the percentage of money they have to, you know, bring in as well for they startup to get invested?
Yeah, so normally that's a very, very tricky question, because every startup and every business is different. So for example, you could be investing in a company that has zero money, that has zero revenue, or you could be investing in a company that's already made $100,000 or $50,000. So it really depends. But you know, for example, you know, most companies that VCs like to invest in they definitely want to see that the company has made money or is on the way. You know, there's no set percentage of you know, there's no like rule of, hey, like you need to be making this much money to invest. It's really on a per business deal. You know what I mean?
That's what's up, man. Because I was, you know, I have a couple companies, you know, I can kind of say are startups, but I never really wanted, like, what I'm trying to say, I never had like the avenue to actually like be in front of a person and, you know, really introduce to them to like what I'm trying to do with my company in order for it to get invested in, because, you know, it goes back to, you know, a lot of people are scared, or some people don't really know who to go to and stuff. Some people don't want to network.
I advise you. See, what I started doing when I first started is you got to utilize LinkedIn. So for you, what I would do is like whatever business you want to start and whatever business you're looking for more money to help grow, look for those type of people in LinkedIn. So like for me, for example, when I needed money to get started in real estate, or if I'm looking for investors for a particular project, I'm calling people in the business. So for example, you know, I'm typing in on LinkedIn, like, you know, real estate investor Los Angeles, real estate developers Beverly Hills, like, you know, real estate developers Santa Monica. So like you really got to network. That's the thing about LinkedIn is like everyone is at a tip of your fingerprint. So like I don't know what business you're trying to get money for, but whatever it is, just find the closest people to your business on LinkedIn and reach out to them, because everybody knows someone. So like, even if you talk to like 10, 15 people a day, that's a great start. Like eventually you'll be led to whoever you're looking for. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we're gonna talk about that out, you know, after we record and stuff like that, because that's something that I've been wanting to, you know, really dig into. And you write like LinkedIn. Shout out to LinkedIn. Like LinkedIn,
yeah,
is one of my.
It doesn't even need to be only LinkedIn. Like, you just got to be creative on the internet. Like, literally everything you possibly need is on the internet. So like, just Google like other companies that are similar to what you're doing, and get in touch with the staff, and get in touch with like the head guys over there, and you know, maybe, you know, you'll end up partnering with them.
Yeah, cause like, you know,
that's some
backup,
so it's very possible.
Yeah, cause like, you know, you're right, cause like social media as a whole, but like, you know, when people don't realize when it comes to LinkedIn, like LinkedIn is really like, really where is that when it comes to like, if you really want someone to invest in you, or you want like a big career job, or you want to, you know, market out your company, like LinkedIn, like Instagram, Twitter, you know, Facebook is really good for that too. But if you want more, I like to say more of the capital, you know, people in your face, like LinkedIn is more like that, you know. So yeah, I get what you mean, dude. That's what's up, man. So I got two more questions before I let you go. I always ask people their top five, you know, and anything that they doing in their career and stuff. So give me like a top five of, I guess, your most fun like experiences as a realtor, like moments, top five moments.
Okay. Man, that's a hard one. top five moments as a realtor, you know, number one is definitely closing your first sale. Okay. Mm-hmm. So there's two things. Okay, so number one or number two, maybe I would say like getting your first listing, because you always work up to, that's the whole point. Like, that's why you do real estate, to get listings to sell. So like, getting your first listing is definitely a great moment. And then getting your first sale is definitely the top of that, you know, when everything comes into fruition. But also, you know, and you know, other parts I like about the business, I don't exactly have like a top five necessarily, but you know, something I love about the business is like really being myself. You know, being a real estate agent is, you know, it's very flexible. You have your own hours. You could get lunch whenever you could. You know, no one's telling you what to do. You're your own boss. You dress super nice every day. You know, it's really about the lifestyle I love. So like, my top five honestly is like the whole lifestyle of being an agent, you know, driving around in nice cars, wearing nice suits, showing beautiful houses, just overall being in a beautiful city like LA, you know, doing work, just being blessed with like so much opportunity to make money. That's my top five, honestly.
That's what's up, man. That's what's up. And for the final question is, where do you see yourself like 5 to 10 years from now?
Great question. And
you're only 21 years old. It's crazy. Like 5 years, you still be in your 20s.
In like 5 to 10 years, I don't really, let's see. I mean, I definitely want to own a lot of my own property. I want to start developing my own projects, my own houses, my own condos, apartments, duplexes. I wanna be more of like, I wanna have a lot of my own funds to do more of my own projects. So that's where I see myself in 5, 10 years. I want to basically just do everything I'm doing now, but on a much larger scale of actually being like the principal in what I'm doing.
And helping your boy out too, because I need some help.
I got you.
You got any like shout outs or any like announcements before we close it off?
I'm going to give you a couple shout outs on IG, bro.
Okay. Okay, okay.
1,000,000%.
Okay, okay.
But yo, DJ, thank you so much for having me. It was a great talk. You know, I would love to come on anytime. And, you know, to all the listeners out there, you know, hit me up if anyone has any real estate questions or business questions in general. I'll leave my number and my email. My number is 310-691-6199, 310-691-6199. My email is lester@kw.com, blester@kw.com. So you could Google me, you know, I'm online. So if anyone has any questions or needs to reach out to me directly, feel free.
Thank you, man. Thank you, man. Thank you for the information. Thank you for coming on the show again, man. It's a lot of it's a lot of stuff that we're gonna talk about. And hopefully I'll have you again on the show again.
Absolutely. Just give me a time and I'll pick up.
Okay, man. But hey, this has been your boy DJ Anonymous with Sports Biz Music the Podcast with Benjamin Lester, and we out.